Good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is In Re Estate of Alberts. We should note for the record that Justice Miller Lerman is recused in this matter. And Mr. Lindsay, good morning to you. You may approach. Yes. And you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm William J. Lindsay, Jr. I represent the appellants, Mike Alberts and Mark Alberts, in their individual capacities. There are two issues in this case. The first is whether or not the petition for elective share was validly filed. The second is whether transfers of real estate to a revocable trust when the deeds transferring the real estate to the revocable trust were signed by the surviving spouse are excluded from the augmented estate. With regard to the first issue, Mrs. Alberts did not sign the petition. That's Exhibit 2 in the lower court proceedings. The petition filing is the exercise of the elective share under the statute, Section 302317. You also must serve the personal representative. The petition for elective share, the filing of that, is a personal right of Mrs. Alberts. The statute 302315 provides that the right of election of the surviving spouse may be exercised only during his or her lifetime by him or her. The only person signing the petition was her attorney, who was orally authorized to sign it. We have no written documentation of that. The second issue.
Do we have any reason to believe that she did not authorize her attorney to sign?
No, that was in evidence, and I believe it was stipulated.
Is that a uniform provision of the Uniform Probate Code that we adopted? And if so, have any other states held that an attorney at law signing on behalf of his or her client with authorization is not sufficient?
No, I have not found any, and it is a uniform. Vision, but it's of the 1969 code, which there aren't that many states left.
I see.
The second question is the real estate excluded from the augmented estate because the surviving spouse signed the warranty deed?
Well, your answer to the last question prompts me, what's the difference? If we haven't adopted the more recent probate code, what is the more recent probate code?
Well, I really didn't study that.
All
I
right.
don't know the answer.
Thank you.
The real estate was transferred to the revocable trust of the decedent by a warranty deed. There was one for Lincoln County and one for Custer County. There were exhibits, I believe, 8 to 10 in the lower court. These were warranty deeds that were signed by Mrs. Alberts. They were recorded. They were acknowledged as required. The comments to the 1969 Uniform Probate Code indicate property is included in the augmented estate if there has been a transfer made by the deceased spouse to which Section 302314A1 applies. So when we calculate the augmented estate under the Crist decision, we start with the probate estate. We then subtract claims, debts, add the three statutory allowances. And then in order to include any non-probate property, there has to be a transfer of that property made during lifetime or effective at death by the deceased spouse. 302314A1 is where we deal with property that the deceased spouse transferred or maybe had a beneficiary designation. Subsection double little I involves revocable trusts. Absent the warranty deed being signed by the surviving spouse, this property would have been included in the augmented estate. Why would the surviving spouse sign a warranty deed other than to give the transfer and exclude it from the augmented estate?
The county court made its decision on the basis that this could not be, these transfers could not be excluded from the from the augmented estate because Emil effectively retained possession and enjoyment And the right to income from the property.
Yes, that was the county court's ruling. Mm-hmm. The reason that is incorrect is that doesn't take into account subsection C of 2314. Subsection C starts, the augmented estate does not include the following items otherwise includable under subsection A of this section. So we go to subsection 2 of that section, and all that is required is that the surviving spouse have signed the instrument of transfer. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that the surviving spouse manifested consent.
There was no dispute in these proceedings that the surviving spouse signed those deeds.
No, no dispute.
Was there any attempt in this proceeding to raise any issue about knowledge or fraud or any of those sorts of claims?
No, there was no attempt to raise any question but consent. With signing the instrument of transfer, no other manifestation of consent is required. It's not an issue.
Is it your point that the last statute that you cited doesn't refer to any revocable trust? It just says transfers?
That's all it is. The test with regard to retention of possession is under subsection A, not subsection C.
So basically, there's no dispute as to what would be the augmented estate if it were excluded and what would be the augmented estate if it were included.
That's correct. The numbers have all been agreed upon.
So we're looking purely at a question of statutory interpretation.
That's correct. It's all on line 12 of the augmented estate worksheet, and the briefs set out, both sides' briefs set out the numbers. Nothing in subsection C2 requires anything more than the signature of the surviving spouse. We had a decision of this court in Payless Building Center, Inc. versus Wilmoth, 254 Nebraska, at page 1001. Grantors of trusts create a legal entity separate and apart from themselves. And further, this court said, as long as a trust exists, its separate nature must be respected. But also note that these deeds were warranty deeds. Mrs. Alberts warranted against actions by anybody affecting the title.
In the Payless case that you just cited, were the trusts involved there, were they revocable?
That was not a trust.
Oh, okay.
It was a decision involving construction liens. So we have inchoate rights, the right to elective share, and the right to the homestead under 40-104. Deeds in Nebraska are signed every day by the spouse in order to either extinguish or convey these rights. So at the time that Mrs. Alberts filed the petition, she didn't own those rights. She conveyed them or released them by her warranty.
So is there no significance to the fact that the trust was revocable?
The significance would be if he had acted to revoke the trust, we have it back in there, or if he'd taken property out and moved to somewhere else, there's another transfer to which the statute could apply. There's no significance to the fact that this transfer, once it's out, it's out.
Does the exclusion refer to a trust specifically, or is it simply referring to a person, the transfer to a person?
It does not specifically refer to a trust.
Could a trust be
the action of the deceased spouse in transferring?
So a trust for purposes of C2 would be a person?
Yes, that's the purpose of the Wilmoth Payless case. If there are no other questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Erickman, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Claude Berrickman, Jr. I represent Lois Alberts, the surviving spouse of Emil Alberts. This couple was married for 40 years. They farmed together for most of that time. After Ms. Alberts' husband passed away, she found out she was going to receive less than 50% of her husband's estate. So she chose to file a petition for elective share under the statute, properly granted by the Custer County Court, awarding her a net elective share of $763,985. If you look at the order, approximately 75% of that amount of the elective share is coming from Emil's nephews, Mike and Mark Alberts, who are the appellants in this case, their families. One thing about the elective share, if you win, you don't necessarily take all. When you win the elective share, you get half, and that's the whole purpose of the statute. I'd like to briefly refer to the first assignment. I did sign the petition for elective share for Ms. Alberts with her permission. I've been doing that kind of thing for 32 years. It's authorized by the Nebraska Civil Rules of Pleading, and I don't see any purpose for adopting the rule advanced by the appellee appellant to require it to be personally signed. There's nothing in the statute that requires that. After this 40 years of marriage, Emil and Lois Alberts went to one attorney, and that's pointed out by the appellant in their brief that they went to one attorney, and it seems to me that they seem to think that supports their case. I think it shows the fact that if there was something that needed to be explained to people, each of these parties should have had an attorney to establish these revocable trusts. And the funding of the trust
Do you claim that there was anything that wasn't straight and above board with regard to these transfers that were made at that time?
There's some testimony by Ms. Alberts at trial under cross-examination, it's in our brief, that she essentially wasn't clear about what was going on with the revocable trust that was made.
Well, she must have been clear about the fact that he transferred some of his property to her trust, doesn't he?
Again, her testimony was
Didn't know anything that was going on at all?
Well, there's no evidence that she didn't know anything that was going on at all, no.
So is there any dispute that she didn't sign these warranty deeds under full disclosure?
She signed the warranty deeds. Yes, there's no evidence that she didn't sign the warranty deeds.
And what did she think she was doing when she signed the warranty deeds?
Essentially, walked into a lawyer. There's no evidence, but walking into
Can't we look at it as this was part of an estate plan between parties, and the deceased had conveyed some of his property to her trust and also conveyed some of his property to his trust.
Right.
And they were all signed and joined in by warranty deeds by both spouses?
Right.
The same thing be applicable if Emil had survived?
Here's what I would point out is that essentially the revocable trust is a very common estate planning technique. Real estate is transferred into the revocable trust and has been for many years by a warranty deed, which is very similar, frankly, to the document in the Freeze case. Transferred that property.
Well, but the Freeze case is readily distinguishable because all the wife did there was quit claim her interest to the husband. She didn't consent to him transferring the property outside the estate.
Okay, but the transfer by the husband is a testamentary transfer. Essentially, what the revocable trust does, it's basically a will substitute.
But it's joined in by both parties.
Right. And what I want to point to, because the appellant spent quite a bit of time in their reply brief that we didn't have a chance to respond to, is that no one's referred to Section 30-2316, which is the statute in the probate code that says that here is how you waive your right to an elective share. And that statute is right there in the middle of the elective share statutes and the augmented estate statute. So 30-2316 has specific things that have to be done in order to waive your right to an elective share. And those things were not done in this case. And there's nothing in 30-2316 that the warranty deed signed by one of the spouses constitutes a waiver of the right to the elective share. The whole point of Freeze
is... Are you waiving your right to elective share, or are you simply determining what is considered to be the augmented estate? Aren't those two different things? One excludes certain property out of the augmented estate. The other one excludes you taking under the augmented estate altogether.
What the court said in Freeze was that the transfer...
I think I know the difference between Freeze and this case is that the wife didn't do anything but quit claim her interest to the husband, but didn't acquiesce or consent to his transfer of that property once it was in his name.
But again, we think that the transfer that the wife made in Freeze is similar to the transfer here, I think the same, because they aren't effective until death. And essentially, the transfer made by transferring the property to the revocable trust did not diminish.
As long as he doesn't make that revocation, the property isn't part of his estate. It's part of the trust. It passes. It remains in the trust. If he doesn't revoke it prior to death.
But he has that right to revoke it.
But he didn't exercise.
But the point is that he has the right to revoke it. He continues to retain possession of it, just as Freeze did. And essentially, when Ms. Albert signed the warranty deed, she did not agree to any reduction in the diminution in the amount of the eventual estate of Emil Albert's. Essentially, the legislature says that the augmented estate should be essentially similar to what the federal estate gross estate is. Essentially, the gross estate includes a revocable trust. The revocable trust is also included for Nebraska inheritance tax. The assets in the revocable trust are also subject to claims of creditors under Nebraska law. So essentially, the creation of the revocable trust is a will substitute. And if you can form a revocable trust and avoid the requirements of 30-2316 to specifically waive your right to elect, we're creating a real serious problem.
Well, she didn't waive her right to elect in this case. She simply consented to the transfer of certain property to Emil's revocable trust, and at the same time, Emil consented to transfer of certain property to her revocable trust. But waiver of your right to seek your elected share isn't an issue in this case, is it?
Well, I think it is, and I think that because of the fact, and they tie in with each other. I mean, essentially, and I don't mean to, you know, the language I think it's important is, says that if a spouse agrees to a transfer, this is in Freeze, of property that diminishes the eventual decedent's estate, not the probate estate, but the eventual decedent's estate, the surviving spouse should not be allowed to reclaim the value of the transferred property. Mm-hmm. But that principle doesn't apply if the transfer did not remove the property from the decedent spouse's estate.
Well, so, but the transfer did.
The whole purpose of the elective share and using the augmented estate is to bring things in that were essentially testamentary transfers.
So essentially then you're agreeing with the county court's rationale that C2 is not applicable because it can't be used to exclude real estate from the augmented estate because Emil effectively retained possession and enjoyment and right to income from the property? Is that your basis for your...
That's our position. Yeah, we think the county court correctly decided this case.
Well, wouldn't we have to read into C2, 30-2314C2, something that's not there? It says property transferred to the decedent to any person other than the surviving spouse. It doesn't say except revocable trusts or any exceptions to that.
And I think the point that's in that statute that I'm glad you brought up, Your Honor, is that it says to any person. Those three words in 30-2314C2, to any person, should not include a transfer to Mr. Alberts. Essentially, this was not a transfer. It's an estate planning technique that's being done. For example, if Mr. Alberts had, after transferring that property into his revocable trust, then revoked the trust or transferred it to a third party, would that give the nephews the right to come after Mr. Alberts because he made that transaction? No, well, because the transaction is not effective until...
If he revoked the trust, then the property is back in the estate.
Pardon me?
If he revokes his trust, the property comes back into his estate. He could do that any time during his lifetime, but
right.
After his death, it remained as property of the trust.
So if he did that by himself, can Lois Alberts then, with the deed that she signed, can she go after him because he didn't follow through on the deed that he signed? So in other words, if he revokes the trust and it doesn't do what they...
Well, I don't think Mrs. Alberts cares what he does with the property in the revocable trust. She's consented to it. And as long as it stays in the revocable trust, she doesn't have any interest in it. The same as the transfer of Emil's interest or Emil's property to her revocable trust.
And I guess my point is that if you take that position, people can use a revocable trust to essentially avoid 30-2316.
No, you're talking about 30-2316 to waive your right to take the elective share. That's different than determining what is includable in the augmented estate. Those two things are different to me. Do you see a distinction in that or not?
I do. The transfer from the parties to the revocable trust did not reduce the eventual estate of Emil Alberts for federal estate tax purposes, for Nebraska inheritance tax purposes, for creditors' purposes. It's still there. It's a testamentary transfer.
I want to be clear. In this case, the way the pleadings were framed, all we're concerned about is, did those deeds fit within the C2 definition of the statute? We aren't dealing with issues of duress, fraud, all sorts of other types of claims that might be asserted perhaps in another venue. But right here, it's purely a question of statutory interpretation. You agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor, I do.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal?
There is. You have a minute 31.
A minute and 31 seconds, Mr. Lindsay.
Thank you, Your Honor. The word estate is a word that really is determined by its modifiers. This court in Crisp determined that the estate means the probate estate when starting the calculation of the augmented estate. Freeze decision involved a quitclaim deed that did not transfer any property out of the probate estate or the estate. It was a quitclaim deed from the wife to the husband. Immediately before and immediately after, the probate estate remains the same.
Mr. Lindsay, counsel has indicated that we would be opening up problems for estate planning by following your interpretation, and he recites the 30-2316. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes. 30-2316 is a waiver of the right to even file the elective share in the first place. 2314C2 removes something from the calculation of the augmented estate but does not prevent the elective share from being filed. They are two separate matters, and we take this particular statute as the legislature wrote it. And I believe it was Freeze or Crisp, this court said that there was no changing of the statute. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is State versus Robert W. Grant.